Hey, do you have an idea for a podcast but don't know where to start? Or do you have an already existing podcast that you want to take to the next level? Well, check out WeKnowPodcasting.com. From concept development to theme music to editing to logos, WeKnowPodcasting.com is a one-stop shop for all things pod. Don't hesitate to hit us up. We're very nice.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. This week we are talking about The Giant Claw from 1957, as picked by me, and it's our first episode with Kyle as an official member of the podcast. So round of applause, Kyle. Yay!
Hey.
How'd you like starting off your first movie of the podcast with The Giant Claw?
I quit.
Damn. Another one got away.
It was something else.
I watched it twice in 1 week.
Oh, no.
Well, that's also because you're like, hey, who wants me to watch 18 hours of 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s movies? Okay, I'll do it. Right? But also, this movie is not that bad. Like, truly. Kyle, I don't know if you caught anything that Matt did on that, but I caught a bit. And he watched Attack of the Leech Monsters. And that was very painfully slow and boring. And while The Giant Claw is not a great film, at least it's not Attack of the Leech Monsters.
Oh, that's so weird because that was my double feature. So I'm going to reconsider.
No, I think The Giant Claw, honestly, it's one of the rare movies that we talk about that actually has been covered on Mystery Science Theater 3000, which totally makes sense. But like, this movie is one of those films. It is in that same vein as like a Robot Monster or a Plan 9 from Outer Space, where it is just so cheap that it is like cackle worthy bad at points. Like, I think my favorite reoccurring thing in this movie, besides every piece of footage being reoccurring, is the sound effect that they use for the bird. It's two squawks over and over again, and then a crunch noise whenever it eats something, and that's all they had.
real bad.
You know, before we shit all over this movie too much for being stupid and looking really dumb in 2021, I want to say that I was pretty impressed with all the aerial photography that they had in it.
Yeah, they went in on the stock footage.
Yeah.
Is it stock footage? Because
there's
like,
a lot of stock footage in this. Yeah, especially the beginning. The beginning, you got that clay spinning globe, and then it's just stock footage and narration for about 15 minutes.
But I bet you then nobody was like, oh, that's stock footage. Like,
yeah.
They have the luxury.
Yeah. They were like, this is incredible.
it's funny that we're talking about stock footage because it seems to be a motif that Matt Kelly likes to bring to the show. This was not nearly as egregious, but
Deadly Mantis was like the Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2 of the 50s. it was made of more previously shot footage than real footage.
That's so funny. I've never seen that, and now I don't need to.
Just look up whatever 5-minute clip is online of just the mantis, because similarly to the giant claw, the actual prop of the monster is fairly impressive, all things considered.
I don't know. It doesn't have googly eyes. Like,
you got a point.
I liked the giant bird, all things considered, because this movie looks like it was made for $10, but that is a pretty impressively large puppet. Like,
oh, yeah. Yeah, they had real feathers on those wings, so not a cent spared on that. But there is a part at the very beginning that I never felt so seen by a movie from the 50s. It's not as bad as you think it's going to be. The voiceover says something to the effect of, "Time has lost all meaning." Yeah, we know.
At a certain point, this movie does kind of turn into a pandemic movie when, like, the news report is just like,
stay in your house.
Scientists have said to stay in your house until this aerial creature is destroyed. I think that that's my favorite part about this movie is the absurdity that there is a singular giant bird that is wreaking so much havoc across the entire United States of America that they're just like, we got no other options. We got to lock down this entire nation to protect us from the one evil bird that seems to exclusively just bother our four main characters and nobody else.
Well, it's especially because, like, the science of it, of solving it, takes so long, too, that it's like they really have to be like, shut it all down and just pray that.
But then he figures it out in the course of, like, 2 days, and he's like, stays up, and then he blows himself up, and then there he's like, how long have I been out?
Yeah, Flubber saves the day.
This movie, I really gotta, now that I've said the good thing about that, you know, like, I'm pretty impressed with the amount of aerial photography, even if it was stock footage, because it's pretty solid. I mean, like, the editing of this movie is not that bad, but the writers thought they were so fucking clever. The comments that everybody has, it's quippy dialogue left and right. It's like this movie was written in 1944. They make everybody talk like fucking they're in Casablanca.
Well, I've got a question for Kyle, because Kyle obviously has made two different documentaries that, while they're not directly tied to necessarily bad cinema,
right,
they are definitely a celebration sometimes of absurd cinema. And this is the first time we've ever talked about a movie by Sam Katzman ever on this show. But I feel like he's almost, in a lot of ways, from what I've read, like the lesser known Roger Corman. Like Roger Corman with less budget.
Well, I think that, like, the reason of the lesser known, or that he's lesser known, is just because of the time frame, right? Which I guess is why anybody is lesser known than who comes after them. But, like, in the same way, those movies were of a specific time and group of people that saw them. And Roger Corman was coming about in a way, in a time where the regular person was understanding and getting involved in independent film or fringe cinema or just oddball B-rate bullshit, you know? So it's like Sam Katzman doesn't get his comeuppance for the influence that he has on a generation that comes after, even though the giant claw is in his repertoire.
What else did he do? Like, I don't know the name, so I need some context here, please.
I think the most notable thing that he did that I can think of was The Werewolf.
Mm-hmm. He did a lot of Bela Lugosi's, like, later films, like The Ape. I think he did The Ape Man.
I'm pretty sure he did, too.
A few of those things that you just, you know, Lugosi was just cranking them out.
The Christopher Lee of his time.
Well, he also did, like the Superman serials from the 40s that you would see.
Wait, Sam Katzman did?
Yeah, he did, like, those.
Okay, so I have watched Sam Katzman before The Giant Claw. All right. I grew up on the 1940s Superman. I remember having a Superman TV show VHS. I think that had 2 or 3 episodes on it. Not much, you know. I believe it was right before Christmas Vacation or maybe Summer Vacation. Everybody in class brought in VHS tapes to play, which is like the most 90s thing you can think of, right? So I brought in this Superman TV show VHS tape, and everybody that brought in a tape got it put on the list. I was so disappointed that mine was last on the list. And so it did not get watched, but it was last on the list. No one wanted to watch fucking Superman. I'm like, you guys don't want to watch Superman. I don't remember what they picked, but they did not pick my Superman. And I remember the girl that I was obsessed with. And I would consider her my first girlfriend because she came over to my house. We played. And then she handmade me a Valentine thank you card with her school picture in it. So things were pretty serious, all right?
Yeah, that's
but she came up to me after class, after that day of school was out. She was like, Scott, it's okay. First is worst, last is best. And I'm here to tell you it's not true. Yeah, I appreciate the sentiment.
No, Scott, don't take this from me. This is all I've been living by for the last 36 years. So first of all, I have a very similar story to you, Scott. I was in fifth grade, and somehow I convinced my entire class when we all brought in tapes to watch that we should watch Clue, and no one talked to me again since.
Well, that is not true, because Clue is an absolute masterpiece, and I'm not trying to say the Superman TV show is a masterpiece.
No, I'm just saying Clue is great to us because we get that type of humor, but to a group of fifth graders in 1998, I don't think they were really in the mood for a wacky Marx Brothers inspired screwball comedy starring a bunch of people that they didn't know or care about.
You tried, man. You tried.
You were ahead of your time, Matt. That's what you need to take away from this.
That's
experience.
What it is. So to further stress the fact that Sam Katzman was in a similar league to a Roger Corman or even a Charles Band, I just checked. In 1957, when The Giant Claw came out, that was one of 9 movies that he produced.
In a year.
Yeah, just calming down it. After the 11 that he had done in 1956. So he just had like a factory where they were just fucking cranking this shit out exclusively for drive-in.
Yeah, I was about to say, can't beat that. You can't argue about that being a good hustle.
You know, they were aiming it for that drive-in teenager from the 50s, as is clear when the 50s teenagers show up in
this
movie.
Hey, daddy-o, get that tin can off the road. I have that as a note all in caps.
Yeah. Like, yeah, we ain't afraid of the big bad bird.
And then they get fucking murdered. I really enjoy everybody except for McAfee.
Yeah.
He's like the... What is he, an electrician or something?
Oh, yeah,
like
he's
that?
Yeah, did you know? Did you hear him say that he was an electronics guy?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But no, he's like
50 times.
He needs to calm the fuck down, because he goes from disrespecting the mathematician, the female mathematician. He drinks all of Pierre's Applejack, because poor Pierre is like, I make it myself. It's a good for the snake bite. Somehow he sounds Italian and Borat, but he's supposed to be French-Canadian.
French.
I don't know.
It is the most baffling character, and I do want to talk about Justice for Pierre, because
he gets
dragged into this bullshit. He's like, no, I'm not fucking with this. Gets killed, and then they're just like, well, we can take Pierre's car now because he doesn't need it anymore.
He doesn't fucking need it.
Like, so need
it. Overly so rational. And the poor... Okay, so the female
He would have given us his car, I swear.
Yeah, well, Pierre was a pushover. He absolutely would have given... Pierre was like the character in every kid's cartoon that gets like pushed to the ground, and it's just like, you know, my friends would... It's just because they're my friends. That's why they shoved me around. Like, that's Pierre this entire fucking movie until
he
dies.
It's Matt as a child. This is why Matt is defending him. That's why he wants justice for Pierre.
They could not care less with Pierre. They cared more about the nameless soldiers falling into this bird's mouth than a person who's supposedly their friend.
Yeah. Like, the one who showed them the greatest amount of hospitality that anyone ever could. And they were just...
He can go fuck himself.
Yeah. But McAfee is such a prick. He kisses the mathematician without consent, which I was hoping that he was going to get killed as he kills La Cacaña at the end, but no, he gets to live through the end, and he even puts the mathematician on coffee and sandwich duty before they're about to take the plane up with the antimatter gun, whatever it is. So
yeah. The plane poops antimatter bombs
something. You can't put it in the front or else it'll waft in. Yeah. So they got to put it out the back.
It's always great when you have these movies where the main character is the worst part about the movie.
Dude, Carly and I audibly gasped at the first like quip about McAfee, who's not a pilot, but he's going to fly this plane at the beginning of the movie because he's an electronics guy. Like, audibly gasped at the comment about spanking, which if anybody watches the first 5 minutes of this movie before they shut it off, they'll get to that line. Carly and I were like, and little did we know that whole plain non-consensual kissing scene was going to happen and last very long.
And then he's like, give me your map. I'm going to write all over it too. Like he has no respect for anybody.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's everything from top tier assault and harassment down to just like bad housekeeping and not loving your dead friend. Come on. You gotta be a better
dude. He's a great example of what not to do.
That's why they named the virus protection, service after him.
I'm so glad I'm not the only one that thought about that.
I can't get his name right every time. McAfee. I don't even know
how to say the virus protection. That guy's batshit crazy too, the guy that made that up. So maybe there's a lesson to be learned.
The two special effects that specifically jumped out at me as being like absolutely stellar is the first plane crash landing, where it is like the most toy of toy planes, just kind of hitting the ground and skidding to a stop with no problem.
That took you out of it? Because I mean, I felt very immersed by that.
No, I was sucked in. The other one that I remember laughing my ass off during the live stream, and it was still pretty early during the live stream, so this wasn't even like a delirious laugh just yet. But then equally laughing, rewatching it earlier this week for the podcast, just the shots of the people in the parachutes, and it's like the most G.I. Joe with a parachute just like tossed in the air, just like doot, 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 like kind of slowly making their way down, and then
I gave like those out as party favors at a Halloween party one time. They're just like little, plastic,
those
army men that you toss up.
Oh my God.
I love
another
them.
Memory I love unearthed them. Thanks to this is that I was given an army man with a parachute. And the way that the house that I grew up in is that there's a deck that then, you know, goes down the hill, goes down, the deck stays straight. So obviously as a young child, you're going to throw shit off the deck and run down the steps. You're going to go get it and you're going to pick it back up and you're going to do it all over again. And I did that two times. And the second time, I never found out what happened to the G.I. Joe army man, whatever, because it literally disappeared. I don't know where
it went.
Was it
in 1957? Because the giant claw just swooped in and they used that as a shot. Sam Katzman, your uncle. Yeah, dude, they disappeared as quickly as you got them because they're so tiny, and I don't understand what happened. The wind just takes them.
But the giant claw, I think we can all agree it was pretty tight. So...
Hey guys, it's Matt interrupting the episode real quick to tell you two things. First of all, if you haven't already, go head up to the Patreon page at patreon.com/HMN podcast. There's a bunch of different tiers. You can get a ton of cool stuff like video versions of the episodes, getting the episode a week early, or weekly bonus content from us. This includes talking about movies like The Wicker Man and Teen Wolf and a bunch of other kind of bad movies. Dick Tracy is on the horizon at this time. Or just getting a newsletter from us once a month, letting you know what's going on in the lives of the Horror Movie Night team. But if you don't feel comfortable doing a monthly Patreon donation, I totally understand. But would you consider maybe going over and getting yourself a cup of coffee from Rootless Coffee? Go to rootlesscoffee.com. And if you use promo code capital HMN10, you get 10% off your purchase, and it helps out us. We get a little kick of that money. So if you want to help support the show and you're a fan of coffee, Rootless Coffee is a phenomenal coffee brand made from some of the finest beans in Michigan. I know, who would have thought? And it's run by Jono of the pop punk band The Swellers. That's even extra cool if you're a fan of pop punk music, which if you're listening to Horror Movie Night, there's a good chance you are. Anyway, back to the show.
Double features. I'm going to go with a really weird double feature on this one. And it's probably only because this movie's fresh in my brain because we're recording this not too far removed from Halloween. I would double feature this with Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad.
Really?
And the reasoning is because the opening narration sounds so bizarrely similar to the way Bing Crosby narrates the Sleepy Hollow portion of that movie. And if you haven't watched the Legend of Sleepy Hollow cartoon in a while, which honestly, truly, check it out. I'm sure it's on Disney Plus. It is still to this day like stunning animation
so
with
good.
Some good scares mixed into it. Bing Crosby's narration is just like, all right, let me tell you about this little here cat that used to walk around sleeping. Like, it's like the most like lazy, laid back. You just imagine he's got a cigarette in his hand and a glass of wine in the other end, and they just showed up in his home and he's sitting by the fire and he's like, yeah, just hand me the script. I'll take care of this. Like,
you would be hard-pressed to tell me anything that would get me to stop believing that that was how it happened.
Truly.
If you haven't rewatched that animated segment in a couple years, it is insane that Bing Crosby is also the voice of Ichabod Crane, because there's a million voices I imagine coming out of that skeletal drawling of a human being, but Bing Crosby doing his boom, like, is not the voice that Ichabod Crane should have.
No.
When he's like walking and singing. Like,
not at all. Like, it's too smooth.
It's insane.
Well, it was going to be Attack of the Giant Leeches, but I hadn't watched it in a while. So I actually think...
Wait, is that a bit, or have you actually seen Attack of the Giant?
I've seen it, but it was probably when I was like 16 and okay. Got one of those four packs of movies, and I was like, I'm gonna learn.
Kyle, and, it was not on a four pack.
Okay,
it was
thank
in
you
one
so
of those
much.
50
oh,
it was 50 movies. Yeah, yes, yeah. 50 movies for $5 at
right,
Best Buy.
Right. Well, that's the problem, is that I didn't know any better, and I spent the money on the four pack that I probably could have spent on the 50, dude. And I've learned since. I am going to go with Day of the Triffids, because there is also, which is maybe actually my second choice, but I'm going to go with it because it's been on my mind. There's a, it's a way better film, first yeah. off. But second, there is a plane scene that sticks with me so much more than any plane scene, including the non-consensual plane scene in Giant Claw. And I just think that it's, if you're already in that sort of like world ending mindset, you might appreciate Day of the Triffids.
Yeah, you might as well just go all in on some killer plants.
Yeah, and they sort of look similar to the Giant Claw in a way.
Weirdly, yeah.
I'm going to go with that. I was bouncing back and forth between another, but I'm going to let Scott go because he might actually pick the one that I was thinking.
Well, if we're talking about Kings of Schlock, I mean, I feel like Quetzalcoatl, the Winged Serpent.
Yep, that was what I was going to say.
The other one. Now, yeah. I don't necessarily want to watch that again. I've watched it one time. I watched it, actually, in 2020. I just didn't enjoy it, but I feel like it is a remake of the Giant Claw, though. I mean, and I would not be surprised if Cohen like did that on purpose, right?
Yeah. You know, Scott, I agree with your sentiment that it's not one that I revisit, especially out of like Cohen's catalog, but at the same time, I was watching it when there was a lot of turmoil, like you were watching during lockdown.
Yeah,
I was watching it maybe a couple years prior, and there seemed to have been a lot more of like domestic terrorism turmoil going on in the world, and between that and God Told Me To, like, Cohen has this really, I mean, phone, and like beyond that, Phone Booth and all these things, but like Cohen has a way of utilizing like American fear and then putting this like, I mean, winged creature, like giant claw fucking thing that nobody sees ever in the sky, but as soon as it appears, like, it's game over. It's yeah. It's this really interesting thing that I think it either could be evolved into something today, or it would be the giant claw of today. And it could go, it's, there's no middle ground.
As long as there's practical, I will watch a 2022 reinterpretation of Giant Claw. Like, I will
fuck
watch
yeah.
the shit out of it.
That's a great double feature. That was, I'm so happy that you chose that.
Well, here's one thing I gotta say about Q, is that it is a bigger, quote-unquote, movie than what I've seen from him as well. But at the same time, it's kind of a cop procedural. So they're not really spending a whole lot of money.
Which, right. again, right. is kind of on par for Cohen.
I mean, well, and God Told Me To is the same thing. It's like yeah. All of those must start in some way, and that must have been how he sold them, maybe. And then just goes fucking off the wall. I love him, but I also know that he's not for everybody, and it's really just like a specific sort of feel.
Yeah.
Let's dive into the what did we watch, and I feel like my answer might just lead to a whole big ass discussion anyway. Finally finished season 3 of What We Do in the Shadows, and
yeah, you
it was
finished
a pretty
it?
Damn good season. Yeah.
Kyle, have you finished it? Do you watch that show?
I've watched 2 episodes, and not because I don't like it. I really enjoyed it, but I was already really bad at TV, and now I'm especially bad at TV with a child.
See, and this is where I don't understand being a parent at all, because in my brain I'm like, seems like a perfect time to watch TV. They can't talk. You're just going to be holding them anyway. Why not throw some television on?
I don't want, I'm going to burn out their retinas too early. See, admittedly, at the beginning of, I mean, when he was like sleeping more than like 30 minutes for a nap and, you know, whatever, we would watch stuff, especially while Carly was nursing, but times have changed. I mean, he's 6.5 months at the time of this recording, and all hell is broken loose in my house. anyway, continue, man.
Yeah, season three was really good. I don't know if it, I think season two might be my favorite of the three seasons. This season, someone had pointed this out to me, and I didn't really think about it at the time, and then I realized it, but they were like, this is the season that Jermaine Clement walked away from it because he's focusing on other projects.
Wait,
right now.
Season three is, or season two is?
Season three is. And it's like, you can kind of feel that
he's still a producer of it, though.
He's still a producer, but he like was a writer for a lot of the first two seasons. Season three was still a blast. I mean, the last two episodes, Colin Robinson stuff is just fucking fantastic. So
Colin
excited
Robinson
for season four.
So, so much funnier. Like, for being the annoying asshole character, it's impossible not to think that he's hilarious. I don't know. I mean, I if I'm choosing a favorite season, I would be hard-pressed to say that season two is better than season three. I would consider them equally good for different reasons. I just thought that season three, I think that there were like two stinker episodes in season three, and I don't remember season two's episode list as well because it obviously was a year ago. I feel like when it was good, it was so good, like belly laugh.
Yeah.
Just can't get it out of your head kind of stuff in season three. So
the whole idea of almost dedicating half of this season to like a budding bromance between Laszlo and Colin Robinson was like, those were the best episodes. When you had like the two of them, like just, like I think I mentioned it in a previous episode, but the episode where they're trying to get the car out of the library is like one of the funniest fucking things I've ever seen in my entire life. Like it is just an amazing episode. I mean, if you haven't watched What We Do in the Shadows yet, you should do it.
I'm right here, Matt.
And season three is great. But but that's all I got to say.
I have recently, because I don't watch so much, but we have a child. And I've recently discovered the joys of reading before bed.
Oh yeah!
As a I'm just coming into my 30s, and I figured it out. both learning to read and acknowledging that it's fun to read. So I read on a whim "The Little Girl Who Lives Down the Lane" by Laird Koenig. When I bought the books, the clerk at the used bookstore had said. Oh, actually, he didn't say it to me because I had to take the baby and change him. I had my friend buy all my books. And then this merchant talked my friend's ear off, who had no idea what I was buying or why I was buying it. And so he didn't care anything about what he was saying. But he was like, oh, the guy said a movie is really good. I go and watch the movie. And that's what I watched recently was Little Girl Who Lives Down the Lane. Jodie Foster, Martin Sheen? His performance, for somebody whose name I forgot, is really, wow, it's like really menacing. Like the book itself is super sinister, but his portrayal of that character, Frank Talbot, is so, so, so sinister. And I feel like that movie flies under the radar a lot for those mid-70s, like really sort of provocative horror thrillers. Very minimal. It reminds me a lot of Let's Scare Jessica to Death, just because of the ambiance, the location. You're dealing with somebody in a house. There's not a supernatural element per se, but there's this element of questioning of why we're in this situation. Like, why, truly, the whole film is, why is this little girl in a house at the end of the road, seemingly alone? And Jodie Foster, I mean, since day one in Bugsy Malone to wherever she is now, is an incredible actress. Yeah. And she was incredible as the little girl, Rin Jacobs. It's a really great tonal, like weird, creepy thing with some good characters. Great characters, truly. And the book's great too. If you can track down the book, it almost is like mimics the film completely, which is one thing you don't really find.
Was the book first or was the movie first?
Book was first.
Okay.
Book was first. Yeah. But the movie wasn't soon after.
I gotta mention, because you just mentioned Bugsy Malone, which I still have never seen. But everybody I know has been like, everyone I know has been like, Matt, you love Paul Williams. How the fuck have you not seen Bugsy Malone?
They just put out a really nice Blu-ray of it. If you wanted to go all in,
dude, they used the song in a Coke commercial. They used one of like it's amazing. I want to watch it with you. I want you to see it. I want you to just whatever iteration you watch that movie in. I'm excited for you.
I will find a way to watch it soon.
So we've gone through television shows, books/movies, and I want to talk about a cassette tape that have been listening to. I do not have the cassette tape. I have been listening to it on YouTube, but my week has been basically consumed by the McGruff the Crime Dog cassette tape from 1986.
Oh my God. I sing this do you to know Carly. About this? I sing the
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois.
60652. Yeah.
That, I think there were. Are we talking about the same thing here right now?
Scruff McGruff.
Well, Scruff McGruff. That was his little.
Well, we're talking about
his
the television
jingle
ad.
On the television commercial.
Yeah.
If you wanted to get the Scruff McGruff coloring book, you had to write the Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Okay. Well, that's fucking wild. But the reason that I know about the Smart Kids album on cassette tape that McGruff the Crime Dog did is because it's a very popular. Sound on TikTok, and it's like doing crack and cocaine every day. Do you guys know about that?
No, that's incredible.
What? Fantastic.
Okay, so here's the track list. Winners Don't Use, No No No, Marijuana, which also has a ripper of a guitar solo in it.
Fuck yeah.
Inhalants, Cocaine and Crack, Alcohol, Just Say No, Smart Kids, Make Your Body Last, I'll Decide on My Own, and I'm Glad I'm Me. It's incredible.
Is Make Your Body Last a ballad?
I have not really gotten that far because after alcohol, I'm just full. Literally full. Like, I get to the sixth song, and I'm like, I don't need the other five just yet.
I'd like to believe No, No, No is just him doing that Ringo Starr song that I love so much, but I have a feeling probably not.
Until you listen to it.
Scott, this is incredible.
I will post the link in the group. It's so catchy, and he uses his Scruff McGruff voice. The funnier thing about it is that the guy who was the voice actor for Scruff McGruff, he got the ATF called on his ass because he had a field full of weed growing in the backyard and a basement full of weapons with a rocket launcher. Like, the dude.
Are you sure this isn't like a Barney had drugs in his tail urban legends? This is legit?
It's legit.
Wow. Man, yeah, you can't make up the truth.
But
so
think
severe.
About it. They must have been doing huge bong rips and fat lines of coke when they're recording this in the studio because
with police money, with PD money,
with police money, it's really really fun.
Amazing.
Though. It's like actually fun music. It kind of sounds Matt. What's that band that did that song or that whole album, Getting in Shape, Humping and
Rump Posse.
Rump Posse. Yes.
I got some listening to do.
There's
I'm
a
excited.
Band called Rump Posse that I found on MySpace, and their entire genre is 80s workout music. But they were like a band in like 2010, so they literally dressed in like the shortest cutoffs that they could find and like belly shirts, but then would just rip through this like amazing synthy 80s guitar solos. But like literally, it was either instrumentals or instead of lyrics, it would just be like, all right, now 1, 2, 3, 4, and stretch. Like ripping through these songs.
Do you know the Transformers 1986 soundtrack, whatever that was, the 80s Transformers movie soundtrack?
Stan Bush, The Touch. The Touch.
And the original White Lion Transformers theme song. It's like that. That's what it wrote. That's what the Scruff McGruff and Rump Posse
I need to hear this,
stuff reminds me of. So
I almost forgot Rump Posse existed, and I used to listen to their cover of Mike Tyson Punch Out all the fucking time.
That is literally at the lowest bit of the internet. It has to be.
Now.
Now, that's dude. That's their crazy. MySpace had way too many followers.
That's amazing.
Also incredible, The Giant Claw, which we watched this week on Horror Movie
Who
Night.
I realize has the same hairdo as my son.
Yeah, there you go. Just a few.
The strand. I can't put them down. It doesn't matter how windswept they are or if the air is still. He's just got a wisp of blonde hair hanging out the top of his head.
And well, he also eats G.I. Joe's falling from the sky.
Yeah. Well, we're trying not to. It's a choking hazard, Scott. Shit.
All right. Well, that was The Giant Claw from 1957. We'll be back next week with even more Horror Movie Night.
Listening to the Geekscape Network.